Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 277. I'm your host, James Gilmore, and joining me today is Peter Willington.
Hello.
Hello there. Are you excited about E3? I'm excited about E3. Can you tell that I am excited about
E3? I can tell that you are excited about E3. Now, James, here's something. Are you going to E3?
No, that's why I'm excited about it.
Right, okay. So you're not going, so that makes you excited.
Yes, now, because I've seen E3 from the inside, and I know how big and scary and full of sweaty, sweaty men it is.
And disease.
So, Peter, are you going to E3?
I'm going to E3.
Hey! Are you excited?
Ever since I started in this crazy rap game, I always wanted to go to E3. It was always a big thing on my bucket list of like things I must do.
Yes.
And I finally get to go in a few days' time to Los Angeles, and I get to see all of the amazing games, and I get to go to one or two of the ridiculous conferences where all the silly things happen and all the quotes get taken out of context. And I get to meet a whole bunch of lovely people who are going to show me some mobile and also handheld, like Vita and 3DS games. So I'm very, very excited. I'm staying in China, I think Chinatown, or possibly one of the really rough districts of Los Angeles. I don't know which one yet. It's one or the other, but I'm very excited nonetheless.
Although slightly petrified of the accommodation in which you are residing.
Yeah, not too good. I mean, basically,
the Hilton was overbooked, basically. Yeah, so you had to go somewhere else, which has maybe got a door, maybe.
I don't know why the people who pay our bills didn't get on the Hilton earlier, but oh well.
Bizarre, isn't it?
I'm sure it's just a simple mistake.
But I hope so, because these gaming conferences have become far more welcoming to the mobile world. Previously, you'd go to an E3 or a GDC or something like that, and there'd be like some poor soul standing in the corner with an iPhone 1 going like, does anyone want to play Snake?
We've bought Tetris to this thing.
That was it, and it was really tragic. But nowadays, it's bustling. You know, huge chunks of the conference is devoted to mobile gaming because that's the way that sort of gaming is going.
Yep.
So it's much more exciting from us, and lots of stuff that we will be bringing you, obviously, on Pocket Gamer and over on AppSpy as well. Lots of video coverage and lots of articles coming up over the next week. So you can look forward to that. But there's been stuff happening this week as well. So first of all, updates, please. If you are an Android gamer, then you might have been keeping an eye on the Humble Bundle PC and Android 10 that was launched. It's already got a bunch of cool stuff in it, but they've added a few new things to it, the most notable of which is Frozen Synapse, which is that top-down tactical shooter doodad. Have you played it, Peter?
No, I haven't. That's meant to be like really tactical and really strategic and
It's quite elite. It went onto the iPad. It appeared on Android. It went to the Vita as well. But it's very minimal, top-down, like neon rooms, and it's kind of turn-based, a reactive turn-based game, which you send your dudes in, and then they pause, and then the other team moves in as well. And whilst they're moving, if you've left your team exposed, they will take shots as they go. It's quite involved, it's quite tough, but it is very, very good. So that'll be available to you if you buy the Humble Bundle now. If you want to unlock those three new games, though, you do have to pay $4.92 or above.
A billion games.
That's right. You have to hit that average or above. But still, like, that's nothing for the amount of games and stuff that you'll be getting. So if you're an Android user, get on that post-haste. Also, SXPD, which is the Bronze Award-winning comic book first-person driving game shooter thing, which we played on the Twitch stream and sort of accidentally completed.
Yeah.
Which we didn't think we were going to do. We usually do these kind of hands-on once a week or twice a week. We'll play a game for an hour that looks interesting, and I took an interest in this. And 40 minutes in, we completed the campaign. We're like, oh, right. But that's because it's an episodic game. It's based around chapters. As it's got a comic book format, you look at the story, and then it kind of seamlessly moves into a driving combat game, which is all done in a monochrome, sort of cel-shaded way. It's very pretty, and it's actually quite responsive and fun to play. The gameplay is a little bit one-note, and like I say, it was quite short. But there are other modes, a general kind of free-for-all combat mode where you can zoom around and take out as many people as you possibly can. It's fun, if a little limited. However, if you were unsure about getting it, then it is currently free on the App Store. I know. You have to get there quick, though. If you're listening to this right now, I think it's one of those 24, 48-hour things. So it just went free. It should still be free now, but go and have a look and grab it if you fancied giving it a little bit of a try. And also, Angry Birds Space has been updated with a great big wadge of new content. It gives you 40 new levels. The first 20 are free, and you unlock the second 20 by collecting all the stars in the first set of levels.
Cool.
That's how it works. If you want to, you can buy the second set of levels, or just complete them all and get them that way. There are also bonus levels that you can do by finding a bunch of NASA research vehicles, if you can do so. You also get bonus levels for getting every single star and every feather. You can throw Buzz Aldrin at pigs, but he's shaped like a buzzard. Because, you see, because Buzz Aldrin, right? You don't look convinced, Peter, by this amazing pun. Come on.
I don't think it is.
Just, oh, okay. Fine. Breaking news. News that just broke. Square Enix Montreal, the guys who were responsible for that recent Hitman game that was actually rather good. Hitman Go.
Hitman Go.
Yeah, which I really liked because it took a console franchise and then completely reinvented it for iOS and touchscreens, which is exactly how you should handle those kind of console franchises. Turned it into a board game. Some people were like, what is this? I want a Hitman game, not a board game. 0 out of 10. But actually, it's really good. And it kind of, in a weird sort of way, maintains the ethos of the Hitman games. Because you have to think very tactically, plan your next move, and ideally get through it without shooting or alerting people.
Now, I don't remember. What does this game look like?
It's a 3D board game, if you like. Your man moves along set channels, so there are lines drawn out, almost like a sort of grid, and you can move your guy around from point to point a turn at a time. When you make a move, the enemy agents, they also make moves, and they all kind of jostle around the screen, and it's almost a bit cute. The guys look like Sabutio characters.
Yes, okay. Now yeah. I remember.
And the jump around, and it's really nice. It's kind of cleverly done, and it's smart. The team has just announced that they're bringing a new game, Hitman Sniper, to tablets and iPhones and other phone devices as well, later on this year. This information literally dropped about an hour or so ago. So this is proper, like, exclusive stuff going on here. Apparently, according to the team, it is going to have some genetic links to the other game that they released, which I think was called Sharpshooter or something like that. Let me do check. I did know this. Hitman Sniper Challenge. There you go.
Oh, yes, the 360 and PS3 game that came as a sort of free downloadable if you bought pre-purchased Absolution, which everyone seems to have forgotten exists.
Yes, I know, right? Well, if you played that game, apparently they're like, well, you'll have a pretty good idea what's going on here. So in that game, you positioned yourself on rooftops and vantage points and stuff, and you were obviously almost, is it kind of, was it a gallery shooter sort of thing? Or
yeah,
was it
that sort of thing, but using the actual in-game engine of Absolution.
Right, okay. So it was about just putting yourself in the right place and then trying to pick off your enemies without being, you know, taken out, and making sure you snipe them before they get to the chopper. And all that sort of stuff. If they can bring that kind of gameplay to iPad and genuinely make it work, I'll be very pleased. Because it doesn't always work, I find. Stuff they've said about it is quite smart and vaguely reassuring. So they've said, like, A, they want loads of feedback from the game when it gets released so they can make adjustments. They do want to hear what you've got to say and whether they think you'll like it. And they want it to be massively competitive. So they want as many people to download it as possible so that you can engage in, I don't know if it's going to be one-on-one multiplayer or just competitions in terms of scores and hit counts and stuff like that. It is going to be free to play. That's one of the things they're doing to put your thumb down, man. That's one of the things that they do to try and encourage as many people to download as possible, obviously. It's one way of doing it. Whether that means the game is going to suffer horribly, I don't know. But they say, quote, they do want to make sure they've got the right balance. Please be honest about your experiences, because we want to make sure we are getting the balance right. They're saying lots of positive stuff in the press release, but then it is a press release.
They're not going to go, we don't really think this is very good. So
exactly. So you can treat it with a pinch or two of salt. But based on their previous form, I have a modicum of hope
Mm, yeah, it should be good.
They didn't just release a horrible free-to-play rubbish cash-in fest. They did something new and clever. And I hope that some of that will be reflected in this upcoming game. We don't have a release date yet. All they've said is later this year. But we do know they're going to be revealing more of it at E3. Peter.
Get
on over there at E3. I'm adding that to your schedule list of things to do. Appointment with not, I want to say Ubisoft, that's a lie. Square Enix, Montreal.
Oh, it is Square Enix. It always makes me feel weird when I think about Hitman and Tomb Raider being Square Enix games.
I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? It freaks me out as well. It's like, this isn't Final Fantasy. What's going on? It's bizarre. Also, news of a new game, which I've seen very little of, but I've been reading up about over the past afternoon or so. So, trying to get MOBAs to work on iOS has been a bit tricky. I haven't seen any notable successes. There have been a bunch of them, but... Like, can you think of any really good ones that have worked?
Yeah, there was that Order and Chaos one that was quite good, I seem to remember. And, I think it was Gameloft's one that was pretty good. Apart from that, though...
The problem with the whole genre is that it's very much based on online multiplayer. And online multiplayer can work on iOS, but when you need to persistently be online for long periods of time, and you know, the whole point of mobile games is generally you're out and about doing stuff, and unless you have a massive data plan and really good 3G signal, then it's very difficult to do that. You have to sort of sit at home or sit in a place where there is Wi-Fi and do it. And often if you're sitting in a place where there's Wi-Fi, you might start thinking, well, why aren't I playing Dota 2 on my PC, because I'm in a house now,
because
And that, I think that's one of the issues they have to contend with. However, there may be hope upon the horizon, because a setup called Super Evil Megacorp are releasing one called Vainglory, a creature-based MOBA. So you can see it up on the video there. It looks like it's fantasy stuff, so it's a bunch of random beasties smashing each other to bits. However, the thing that has caught our eye is it's staffed by people who worked previously at Blizzard and Rockstar. So you've got people there who have experience, hopefully, in doing large multiplayer things. Blizzard, obviously, with World of Warcraft, and that is a big bloody multiplayer game. And Rockstar, which has become more and more multiplayer, even though those, you know, Grand Theft Auto games and stuff are inherently single-player campaign games, they have really focused on the multiplayer side of things, especially with the last game. GTA 5 has got a big online multiplayer component.
Do we know what level, though, they were at the studio? Like, I guess that's the big question.
Was it the receptionist?
So for example, like when you go up to Dundee and you go and speak to lots of people, Dundee's in Scotland if you're not a UK, if you don't live in the UK, and you go up there and every other person that you talk to says, oh yeah, I used to work at Rockstar, or I used to work at, you know, one of these other really big companies like Real Time Worlds.
Yeah.
And if you go to Liverpool, they're always like, so I worked on Wipeout. Mm-hmm. And like everyone has worked on one of these really big things. So then you start talking to them and sort of go, so what did you do? And some of them are like, you know, really big, you know, I led the project. And then some of them are like, well, I did the washing up and that was fun.
Yeah. I delivered some internal memos.
Yeah.
And I once spoke to the guy who designed Nico Bellic's face.
I once listened to some electronic dance music.
Exactly. But hopefully, for all we know, this is staffed by all the main guys.
It could be. Yes,
but hopefully they've had a decent amount of experience. It's currently on soft launch at this very moment in the Southeast Asian markets, apparently. Cool. So we might try and download that with our multiple App Store accounts. We might nab that and have a little look at it. Because it looks very strong.
It does.
We're running videos of it at the moment, and yeah, it's pretty smart. And if anything can work on a touchscreen, these sort of top-down strategy-type games do work very well on touchscreen. So there's no reason why the interface and the environments and stuff and the control systems can't work perfectly on a touchscreen. It's always just been a little bit tricky getting the internet connection thing right. I've never been drawn to it because I'm like, well, I'm out on a bus or something and I can't reliably connect to the internet for an extended period because I'm gonna get kicked off at some point. I'm gonna go through a tunnel and lose connection, and so you need to be in a static place with a good internet connection. And then I always feel like, well, I might as well just do this on a PC or a console.
Do you know, I was on a bus the other day and it had Wi-Fi on it.
But even then it cuts in and out, you know. Same thing with coaches, so it's slightly unreliable. However, in order to make sure that the battles don't go on for ages and ages, the matches are 20 minutes long. and teams consists of three players each.
That's really long, though.
Well, yeah, for a mobile game, yes, but for the MOBAs, not necessarily. They can go on much longer than
sure,
that.
But I'm more concerned about the fact that it's 20 minutes long than the Wi-Fi thing, like the internet thing. Like, I don't spend 20 minutes playing a game while I'm out and about. Like, maybe this is one of those games where it's just, you've got an iPad and you're sat on your couch and you go, I don't want to fire up League of Legends. I'm just going to sit here and play this game instead.
Well,
I guess it must be that. But
we'll have to see. I understand why they're launching it in the Southeast Asian markets and stuff first, because I think they're much bigger over there with their online free-to-play type games. It is a free-to-play game, incidentally, but it's not going to be one of those ones that locks you out after a certain period. You can free-to-play indefinitely.
Lovely.
But you'll have to pay up for extra characters and things, perhaps. I imagine a similar model to Dota 2, which is, again, a very, very good free-to-play game, because you can just play it forever and not spend a penny if you want. But if you want to cash in and get some new characters and perks and whatnot, then, you know, you're welcome to. We don't know about the global release date for this one, but apparently it will be soon, inverted commas. We may try and download it early and have a look at the Asian one and try and decipher the languages and just get a look anyway. Because, yeah, looks cracking. You can see a video up on Pocket Gamer right now. And, yes, it's got them pretties. So keep your eyes out for that. Vain Glory, it's called. On to slightly more familiar territory. Angry Birds Stella.
Yeah, very familiar territory. Go on.
A game which we've been covering for a while. Haven't known a great deal about it. You went and actually talked to the Rovio about this, didn't you? Or a gentleman from Rovio. I think I don't know if you're allowed to say stuff about it at this point. I think you may be under embargo or NDR upon pain of death.
I did not officially talk to anybody at Rovio about Angry Birds Stella coming fall 2014.
And that's the line that you're sticking to. However, yes, you don't need to be too cagey, because they have revealed some more stuff. First of all, it's the 10th title in the Angry Birds franchise, and we were expecting maybe that they might do something a bit weird, make it a massive RPG or story-based game or something like that, possibly. But we've just received the first screenshots, and it looks a lot like Angry Birds. It's just got ladybirds in it. And I mean birds who are ladies and not lady bird.
What? Wait, what?
You go. So, okay, to quote Rovio, putting a firm focus on a spirit of female heroism and friendship.
You mean heroism and friendship?
Heroism. Heroism? Because it's a... Does it have to be heroism? Or does that just sound like you've got a drug problem?
I've got a right
smacked out birds being lobbed at wasted piggies. So obviously it'll star Stella, who is the pink bird, if you're not familiar with her work, and she has her new friends Poppy, Willow, Dahlia, Lusa or Luca, and Gale. I know, right? Gale. This flock apparently hangs out on Golden Island, which is another bit of the Angry Birds universe we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And to look at the screenshots, and as Matthew Denier has pointed out, has pointed out in our article, looks like somewhere between Endor and Barbie's Playhouse. The idea here, clearly, is that they're pitching it at girls. And
We question whether or not it needs to be, because it's Angry Birds, and it's a video game that totally works for girls. Like, there is nothing masculine or feminine about Angry Birds. It's Angry Birds. They're birds that are angry. It's not Angry Birds the boys. Big smashy punchy man birds. It's nothing like that. It's just here is an object. Fling it at this thing. Like, that's all it is. There's nothing male or inherently female about either of them. And like, dividing them up into some different thing of saying, like, this one's for the ladies, it automatically means that so the other ones aren't.
They're kind of between a rock and a hard place here, because on the one hand, you can say it's gender neutral, and the game is totally gender neutral and age neutral. It's one of the reasons it's been so successful, because it appeals to everyone everywhere. But if you look at the cast, it is all male birds and one female bird. So you could argue that the cast is very, very predominantly male. And as usual with most video games, you get one female character who doesn't wear very much. That's not true here, although they don't wear anything, but then that's because they're birds. So in this game, clearly they're trying to redress the balance by making a game that is filled up entirely with female cast stuff. But at the same time, by doing that and the way that they've been pitching it, it comes off as a little bit weird and patronising in a sort of like, this is one for the ladies. And we've mentioned it before on the podcast, but there was just an amazing line in the promo stuff about, like, just because she's pink doesn't mean she can't, like, do stuff. Which just sounded like an amazing, like, just because you're a girl doesn't mean you're totally useless.
Women, know your limits.
I know, right? But, like, obviously maybe we're being a bit sensitive about this, but it just came off a little bit sort of...
So I get the feeling the reason that they've made this is that the toys appeal much more to a male demographic than females. Like, if you think about the packaging of the toys and think about how toys are usually packaged towards boys and towards girls, yep. Girls' toys generally tend to be light pinks, light blues, light purples. They tend to be sort of pastel colours and that sort of thing. So that when they're in the shops, and this is the sort of theory of advertising, like, we're going into marketing theory at this point. Like,
that's why everyone tuned in, right? Marketing theory.
When you look at it on the store shelves and you're an idiot who doesn't actually listen to what their child wants or cares or anything about, maybe sort of forcing them down certain gender paths, when you look at a big wall of toys in a shop, you go, pink, that's for girls, and you buy it. You don't see red, that's Angry Birds, I'll buy it. It's red, that's probably for boys because it's a fire truck or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think this is a move by Rovio, and I could be wrong, but I think this is a move by Rovio and Hasbro to sell more toys.
Well, I'd be inclined to agree, because Angry Birds Stella is going to be coming out in September and will support Hasbro-produced telepod figures, just like the ones that you got for Angry Birds Go. So, yes, there's going to be a great big toy tie-in, and clearly it's going to run the cute, girly toy range, and perhaps this game is maybe just backing that up rather than a real need. Because by making it strictly female-focused, essentially you're deliberately sort of excluding half the game-playing audience. Whereas, I mean, like, guys can still play it, but you're deliberately appealing to girls and not guys. And I think it's pretty 50-50 split, I imagine, on Angry Birds. Because, like, yeah. You say, the gameplay is very, very gender neutral. Yeah. But with the toys, I imagine this is a good way to try and sell more toys to kids, or to get parents to buy toys for their little girls or something. So that might be what it is. It's also going to get a 13-episode run of 6-minute cartoons that will go up on Toons TV and probably, I don't know, YouTube or something. You can see the full article up on the site, and if you are excited, then yay for you, I suppose.
It's more Angry Birds, and that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Angry Birds is brilliant, and it will serve the fans who want Angry Birds.
Yeah, regardless of what colour it all is, it'll probably play well if you like the Angry Birds games. So there you go. Not all bad. Think of something birdy to say, Peter.
Pigeon.
And about this week, we're going to start off with some jolly jousting action in the form of Rival Knights. So, this is a game that we played on the stream yesterday. You take control of a jousting person who's riding on the back of a horse who has to charge towards his opposing jousty man. In order to speed the horse up, you have to tap at exactly the right time as a little indicator goes up a curved bar, and that accelerates the horse. Once he's accelerated to full speed, you then have to aim your lance so it hits exactly the right spot on your opponent's chest, like you can see in the video there, and then bam, he smashes into the opponent, and you win, and you're showered with, I don't know, land and titles and other lordly things.
Oh, yeah.
It comes from Gameloft. It's a free-to-play game, and I am not really that impressed. Mainly because it makes a very good first impression, I think. You immediately pick it up, and it looks quite good. It's got an almost... Visually, it's almost a little bit Infinity Blade. The big castles in the background, the single environment that you stay in, everything's really well rendered. The character models are very beautifully done. It's motion captured and stuff blatantly, so everything looks cracking. When you play it, it plays a little bit like CSR Racing, which is something we discussed on the stream yesterday, that tapping at exactly the right moment, in the same way you change gear in CSR Racing. It feels like that when you're speeding up the horse. And then you have to draw aim by dragging with your finger to get the lance in the right place. Problem is, you reach a point quite quickly when you're hitting it all. It's like you get all the perfects on the full speed, full speed, full speed, full speed. You hit exactly the right spot on the chest, bam, and then you still lose. And you lose because you haven't got your equipment powered up enough. and you haven't earned enough stuff to buy that, so you have to carry on playing low-end levels and get your grind on. Otherwise, you need to pay up some real money for some gems.
And it feels weird because you're never really told what you did wrong. There's no meters that you're trying to battle against. It's literally you're running towards it, perfect, 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 and then you don't win, and then you feel, because it's free to play, and it could be nothing to do with this, but because it's free to play, you start to think, have I failed because somebody would like me to pay some money now, or is it something else?
We reviewed this on AppSpy. We gave it a 3 out of 5 and said pretty much the same thing. Alex, who reviewed it, made the point that yes, you spend a lot of time looking at those little dots, that little meter, to check your speed and then to aim the actual guy, and you've got no idea until you make contact whether you're going to win, because it seems to be predetermined by your stats. The influence you have over the speed of your horse and the precision strike of your lance only impacts the result negligibly. Right. And in the end, it comes down to whether your armor is strong enough and your lance is more powerful enough, and that's all down to grinding away at, or spending money. So good first impressions, quite pretty. You can download it for free and give it a go just to play it for 5 minutes and see what we're talking about. Whether you'll actually want to push forward in it or spend any money, I'm not 100% sure. But Rival Knights it is, free to play, iPhone and iPad right now. Also out, we mentioned shmups, and especially pretty shmups. This is the one we were talking about. So there was a game called Skyforce that came out, I think, in 2000 and, I'm going to say, 4. Out on Java.
J2ME.
I know, right? How's about that? And it was, at the time, a very good-looking, vertically-scrolling shooter. They have, for the anniversary, decided to revamp it, give it an HD makeover, and slap it onto the App Store, which they've dutifully done, and it's now out. Free to play as well. It is gorgeous. Well, good looking it is. And it's got a clever little control mechanism that I like very much. So as well as being very pretty, you take control of a craft and you're flying over seas at the beginning and taking on battleships and massive choppers and stuff. So it's a vertically scrolling shooter in the shmup bullet hell form. It's not super bullet hell, at least not at the beginning. It's pretty mellow. Haven't got a screen full of plasma. But bloody hell, it does look good. However, the little thing I liked about it, to be positive at the start, is there's a clever little control mechanic whereby you put your finger on the screen and your craft immediately flies over to where your finger is but hovers just above where the finger is. And then when you move your finger around the screen, it stays directly as if it's glued to your finger. But your finger doesn't cover it. Like I say, it always goes just above your finger, wherever you tap it. So it's brilliant. So you can see the craft you're controlling, and it feels like you're almost like pushing it around the screen. And it's a really nice feeling of like direct control over it. And I think that's really, really, really clever. And beautiful visuals aside, it plays very nicely. Doing the dodging around is fun and everything. You're collecting stars and stuff, and you need to upgrade your craft and improve your weapons and all that sort of thing. Free-to-play-wise, it's a little bit less exciting, I think, because you have to get a lot of grinding on if you want to get anywhere, really.
Because you upgrade your craft, don't you? You upgrade the ship, and there's like timers and...
And in order to do that, you have to spend your stars that you collect, and when you go to upgrade, it does that 30 seconds to upgrade the thing, and you're like, ah. And then you upgrade the next level, and it's like 2 minutes to upgrade the thing. And if I'm not wrong, before long, it'll be like half an hour to upgrade the thing, or spend more money or stars. And I never got on with those upgrade systems. I didn't like it in Real Racing 3, and I didn't like it in any of the other free-to-play systems that used it since. But whatever, obviously I'm in the minority. Still, you can download it and give it a try for free, and I almost suggest doing so because it is so good-looking. Like, really, it's an amazing-looking thing. You like shmups. You haven't had a go at this one yet, though, have you?
No, I haven't had a chance to yet.
I'd be interested in your opinion on it.
So I like shooters. This is a little bit more down the route of like a Zevius or a 1942.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite so hot on those kind of shooters. Like, I'm much more a bullet hell, maze kind of that sort of a game, basically, rather than rather than something that's a bit slower, like a Raiden or something like that.
Sure, this is more straight-up arcade shooter than yeah. Bullet Hell, I agree.
This is inspired by, yeah, like the early 90s, like Capcom CPS board sorts of shooters, rather than the modern cave, like ultra finesse style. But yeah,
gotcha. Well, Harry reviewed it. It's just gone up. He gave it a 6 out of 10 and said it sparks occasionally. Looks great, but is a pretty average shooter in a world where that's not really good enough anymore. And like we were talking about earlier, off the stream, you got your cave shooters, you got your Dodonpachis, you've got your Ikarugas. You got to do something pretty good if you're going to try and stand up against that stuff, and apparently it doesn't quite cut the mustard, which is a shame. But either way, you can download it for free on iPhone and or iPad, and it's called Skyforce 2014. There you go. Next up, Quad Blast, which is a game you have played and had a good solid hands-on time with. Why don't you explain Quad Blast to everyone?
Yeah, of course. So Quad Blast is a game in which you are a small white dot and you are in the middle of a single screen, and small black dots are bouncing around that screen, and you must avoid those black dots. You can also shoot the black dots by swiping in the direction that you would like to shoot, either left, right, up or down, but not any sort of diagonal or any gradient in between any of those things. Yeah. You move around by tilting the device itself, so it's like gyroscope controls, and it's a very like one note high score chasing, get out of the way of stuff, get extra items, get multipliers, and try to top the leaderboards kind of a game. I think it looks absolutely fantastic with like really bold use of very bright, vibrant colours. I think the soundtrack is... you were a bit cold on the soundtrack, but I quite like the...
It's all right. I mean, it's very Geometry Wars, which I like that game very much. And I think they mention it even in the promo material, like from the guy who sat next to the guy who did Geometry Wars, I think is the line. And it clearly is heavily influenced by that.
It is Geometry Wars meets Tilt-A-Live, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it looks good. It's very clean. It's not very flashy, but it's very, very clean. Yeah. And they've done that nicely. All the UI stuff is very slickly done as well, which I approve of. A good UI is always nice, you know, menu screens and whatnot. When people spend the time, I approve of that. So it's got a very nice layer of polish on it. It's not doing anything especially new, and it takes a little while to get used to that swiping shooting system. So when you say definitely. Shooting, it's literally like a big beam just projects out from the little ball that you're controlling, but the problem is it only goes on the four points of the compass, so you have to move the guy around to get it to sort of swipe through your enemies, and that takes a little bit of getting used to. It's slightly counterintuitive if you're used to twin stick shooters like things like Geometry Wars, but it's pretty slick. I think we've already reviewed it. Yes, we have. We gave it a bronze and said that it's a fast clinical arcade shooter, perhaps a little bit simple for its own good at times, but definitely worth a look. So if you're into those kind of arcade shooters, then Quad Blaster out right now. iPhone and iPad, I think. Both of them. This one does cost actual money. I think it's £1.49 or $1.99.
It's free to play.
Oh, is it? Is it free to play?
Yep.
Where are the IAPs then?
The IAPs are essentially you need to upgrade the little white dot.
Oh, I see. So
I believe so, anyway.
I think you're right. You can. A £1.49 or $1.99 IAP, I knew that number was in there somewhere, doubles credits earned from glowing orbs.
Ah, well, there we are.
So you can do that and always earn more credits, or you can buy credit packs as well. So there you go, if you're interested in that. Quad Blaster out right now. Now, this is the game that you really took to, and I was like, really?
I love it.
Really, this, really?
I love it, yeah.
Okay, so Wrong Way Racing. It is a single-screen game in which the racing is not really racing so much. Yep. Basically, you take control of one black car, which is going in the opposite direction to three other cars. There are two lanes on a circular racetrack or oval racetrack, and your job is to avoid crashing face-first into the opposing cars. To do that, you have to change lanes at the appropriate moment when they change lanes to avoid going into a head-on collision. You change lanes by tapping the screen once, you change back by tapping the screen again, and that is the whole game.
Yup.
Yeah, so you just have to keep your eye on the other racers, and whenever they drift, which they do, they don't go junk like binarily into the next lane, they kind of drift slowly into the other lane. So you have to make sure you go, oh, they're coming to me, dodge, and keep doing that. And the idea is just to get as high a score as you can. One screen, nothing ever really changes. You try and get your best score. You mentioned at the time it's got that slightly Flappy Bird single tap high score mechanic that people, you know, have found very addictive. Mm-hmm. I thought it was all right. It is what it is.
I think sometimes games come along where they are very simple or generic or something that you've seen a lot of before, but because it looks a certain way or it feels to play a certain way that just kind of appeals to someone, you prefer it more than others. Like, I really like Rage of Bahamut because I like the art in Rage of Bahamut, but there are games that are almost identical to it in terms of gameplay, and I dislike them because they're not that exciting.
Sure.
So, like, I feel like this, like, I'm not that massive into Flappy Bird, but I am kind of into this, and I feel like what I wanted recently was just a very simple game of skill, and this kind of delivered it.
Okay.
Even I accept, like, it's not the most incredible game, but it's, and I'm sure we'll talk about, well, I will be talking about a game later on that is, again, a very simple game, but it just kind of appeals to me.
Okay. Well, it's available right now. I'm not sure how much this one costs. I think it's free. Yeah, it's ad-supported, so it's free to play. Won't cost you a dime. Wrong Way Racing, it's called, and if you like that twitchy Angry Birds super simple stuff, then this might be your next hook. Going from incredibly simple stuff to incredibly successful stuff. Bubble Witch Saga 2's out, boys and girls.
Woo! Woo! Right, where's the confetti? Where's the confetti? Come on!
The bubbly confetti. All right, so if you don't know what Bubble Witch Saga is, then you probably don't know what Candy Crush Saga is, I suppose, or any of those King games, which are based on old game archetypes, such as the Match-3 Puzzler, or in this case, the kind of Bubble, whatever it was.
Puzzle Bobble,
there you go.
Buster Move.
Yeah, Buster Move, exactly. Where you're firing balls up to the top of the screen and trying to match colours in order to cause them to disappear, clear the screen, and then get balls to fall down into little tanks at the bottom in that peggle sort of way that they do at the very end when you try and aim them in for bonuses. The first game was obviously very successful, not as successful as Candy Crush Saga, because frankly nothing in this world is at the moment. Mm-hmm. But the sequel's just arrived, so it's the same sort of Puzzle Bobble template, obviously. There are 50 levels to get through. Apparently they're going to add more later on, every couple of weeks, so you'll get fresh content, which is nice to see. Usual stuff, leaderboards, booster bubbles, which will get you through challenges and whatnot. The graphics are all cute and fluffy and fuzzy, because this is a witch with a big smile on her face, not nasty warts and whatnot. It's very cutesy, free-to-play stuff. It's the sort of thing you'd expect from King at this point. They've obviously got plenty of finances to play with, and their games have a good amount of polish on them now. It depends on whether you like this kind of thing or whether you want another version of Puzzle Bobble, really.
You are really running out of things to say about
it. Well, come on, what can you say? It's Puzzle Bobble, for crying out loud. Like, I'm sorry, but I don't care. You played this. You played this before it was released. You went and talked to King, didn't you? What's your feeling on this?
I think it's good. I think it's a good improvement on the Bubble Witch formula, which is to say the Buster Move formula. It has only, like, two songs in it, which when we went to go and play it, so I went out with a couple of members of the UK press, and we all went to, like, go and hang out in Barcelona with King. It was all very Money Hat, and but I was in this room full of games journalists, and everyone, there was like seven or eight different iPads with this game running on it, and it was the same tune over and over and over again. And I was sat in that same room for 3.5 hours listening to this song just go over and over.
Sounds a bit Clockwork Orange to me.
Yeah, myself and a fellow games journalist, Matt Carman, like, just in the end of it, just went a bit potty.
Yeah, I imagine you would. That'd drive you mental. Yeah, but, like, the game itself, any notable differences from the first one?
I think you kind of said it all in with the apathy. Like, do you like, Buster Move? Because it's that. I mean, if you liked Bubble Witch, it's that. Like, it's very good and it's very well polished. And the visuals, I think, are a massive upgrade.
Yeah, it's a lot sharper than the first one.
Certainly. A real sense of style to it. But at the end of the day, it is kind of a free-to-play Buster Move game, which isn't, too bad or anything like that. One thing I will say is, in terms of it being free-to-play, it is 100% skill-based. Like, it never pushes the ball out of the way in the wrong way or anything like that. Like, apparently it is just completely down to luck as to whether or not you're going to win, essentially. Like, you've got to play well, but you've got to have a bit of luck on your side as well. So if you are worried about that aspect of it, then... But...
That's my opinion as well. Fair enough. Okay, so that's Bubble Witch Saga 2. It's out right now on iOS and Android for free, so you can grab it if you want. Finally today, we're going to talk about one that you played a bunch of. And I played it a little bit as well, and I like the look of it. I'm a little bit disappointed about the payment model, though. Scuba Diver Adventures is out again.
Yeah.
This is for the second time, because technically it came out about 2 months ago, or however long it was, for about an afternoon. But the problem is, it's a game about exploring underwater. You are a scuba diver, and you have to go around and look at fish and pick up stones and bits of coral and that.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's just like, you know, roaming around. There are missions to achieve, but you're kind of given a bit of free rein to mooch about the environment. And obviously there's a big focus on the visuals. It looks really pretty, and you're exploring this underwater world, which kind of looks great. Really,
and
nice.
awesome. If we could just stop there, then it would be one of my favorite games ever.
Exactly. The reason it was pulled very shortly after going live was because that the very first level, the tutorial level of the game, was about diving underwater to go and explore a crashed plane and pluck out artifacts from it. And there it came out was like a day or two after the Malaysian plane crash. And Tolingo, the publisher, decided actually this probably wasn't a good time to launch a game like this, so they pulled it back, which in fairness to them is, you know, quite sensitive and maybe sensible to do. It's out now, and they've changed the introduction level. They did a new tutorial to reflect that. So, as we said, running around, grabbing stuff, looking at fishies, picking things up. Thing is, there is a free-to-play aspect, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah, well, you probably played this more than me. I only encountered it a little bit. What are they fleecing you for here? What do they want you to spend money on?
They would like you to spend money on a lot of things. And so you are... The whole idea about a sort of diving game, especially this diving game, like you can see from the video that we've got going, and if you go to AppSpy and see the hands-on video that we've got... you can see that it's a very serene game. You have to very specifically use this like underwater scooter, I think they're called, to propel you a lot faster. It's very peaceful. It's very chilled out. You're underwater, for Christ's sake. Like, that's what the whole thing is. You want this nice, undisturbed kind of a game. And then you realise that your air supply is tick, 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 ticking away really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you run out of that, you can spend some premium currency and continue playing, get another air tank, or you can just start the entire mission again.
Right.
And it makes the game... It makes missions frantic. And that's not what the game's tone is meant to be about. Like, so there's that. You only get a certain number of air tanks... So that you can only play a certain amount of times before you have to, again, walk away from the game and leave it for a little bit.
Right.
There's currency to buy upgrades for different items and that sort of thing. So you can buy a bigger air tank, like, that will give you another couple of minutes, but that will cost you an arm and a leg. There are all sorts of bits and pieces. So that stuff
But Peter, you get to punch a shark in the face. How can punching a shark in the face possibly be bad?
It is bad because little prompts come up that are just... It is literally like, tap here, success. Tap here, success. And then you win. And by win, I mean everyone loses. Now, the really kind of terrible thing is that whenever it tries to present you a very linear bit of narrative or a linear bit of gameplay...
Mm-hmm.
It all falls to pieces because the open stuff is really good, like going around, seeing these beautiful vistas, like taking photos of stuff. It's amazing. I love games like that. Africa on the PS3, incredible. Love titles like that. Pokemon Snap. And like I think that they're really exciting. But when it tries to present stuff linearly, you end up in fights where you punch sharks. You end up in a sequence where you're being told this bit of story and you're walking along this beach and this real jerk... guy is kind of like looking at your, like,
it's just coming up on the screen now, actually.
It looks like he's looking at your boobs.
Yes, because you are a lady person.
Yes. And that's kind of a bit creepy, but it's not deliberate. It's just really bad modelling.
Yeah, it looks Yankee. It looks like 2006 kind
of. And then, like, there's moments where the camera will be fixed on the action and then it will just kind of wander off and the action will just continue elsewhere off camera, and you just think like, oh, maybe this is all arty, and then the camera's like, oh, and tries to catch up with
and
the actual action,
just screwed up instead.
Awful.
But the explory bits are fun, so
they're amazing.
It's a bit of a shame because the world seems enjoyable, but the constraints they've put upon it kind of ruin it a little bit. It's free to download, so you can give it a go, and maybe just if you stick your nose in and chase down a manta ray or something, you'll have a laugh, but I get the impression you might get put off after a little while. But if you want to give it a try, Scuba Diver Adventures, out right now, iPhone and iPad, if I'm not completely mistaken. Is that right?
Yes.
I think so, yeah. So, yeah, both platforms. Go and punch a whale.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
All right, then, you're hopping on the throne first, Peter, because it's been a while. You weren't here last week, actually. I forgot to address that. Were you?
Was I not?
I don't know. I can't remember.
What was I doing?
I don't know. You offered another one of your weddings or something?
Oh, I went to another wedding, didn't I? Yes, I went to a wedding.
Are you a vicar or something? Is that what you do? Is that your sideline?
Side note, I actually am an internet-ordained minister.
Are you? Are you? Yeah, awesome.
I genuinely am. And so anybody in the chat wants me to get you married with somebody else, probably not legally in this country, but or any country, yeah.
Does that mean you're only online married, like in The Sims?
I think so. It's not recognised in the eyes of literally anyone, but yep.
Okay.
So I've been playing hardcore video games, and I guess the thing that is the theme recently for me has been playing really simple games. Like, I played a lot of very extravagant iOS games recently, and Vita and 3DS, lots of things that really big, chunky games, and I got really like frustrated and wanted to play some really small, simple stuff, right? In contrast to the Mass Effects and stuff that I've been playing in my evenings. So I've been going through the games produced by a company called Fat Fish Games, and they make a range of games, and they all have Tiny at the start.
They do.
And the game that I've been playing recently, which is the sort of World Cup tie-in, so I thought it would be quite a good time to talk about this, is Tiny Goalie World Soccer.
Okay.
And it is very simple. It is slightly more elaborate than Wrong Way Racing, in so much as you have to tap and hold on the screen, and you slide the goalkeeper to basically save shots that are being kicked at you. So you're the goalkeeper, you're moving left, you're moving right, and you're trying to save balls from going into the back of the net, which I understand in soccer terms it means is a bad thing for you to have for that to happen to
I don't know. I like football, but I can't eat a whole one.
Exactly. I think we're all big fans of the greats, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann. He's still a great player for
Mika Häkkinen. He's very fast.
He does all the goals.
But he sometimes gets told off for bringing his car onto the pitch.
Yes. Yeah, he does that as well. So I'm not a huge football fan. However, I quite like this because it is just a game of skill. Like, it could be kind of anything. And in fact, there is, I think it's called Tiny Touchdown, which is an American football thing where you're blocking opponents from scoring a touchdown. So they've kind of done a few of these different games. And I really like this because the ball is smashing into the back of the net, like going forward and like curling around. You're trying to block the ball from going in. And then they throw in water bottles, and you have to avoid water bottles. Otherwise, it's game over. And if a ball goes in the back of the net, it's game over. And then these little multipliers come up, and you have to grab the multipliers, which gives you an extra score. Now, it's a score-based kind of a thing, again, like a Twitch-based, skill-based kinds of games. And I guess that's kind of where my head is at for these. Like, they're all much of a muchness. If you like American football, go and get Tiny Touchdown. If you like a British football, then, or the rest of the world's football, then you go and get Tiny Goalie or Tiny Goalie World Soccer. But it is very, very Moorish, and you do sit there and like you sit there and you get 8 and you think, oh, that's okay, I guess, and then you get 15 and then you get a big run of 30 or 40 and you think, I'm brilliant at this, and you keep going. And it's very much a, if you've got friends, if you've got people who can play this on the leaderboards,
It's just a
high score chaser.
Looking at it, goalie's at the top of the screen. All the balls and stuff are flying from the bottom up towards the goal. And I assume your thumb's on the screen and you're just drifting left and right, yeah?
This is exactly it.
Yeah.
The one thing, the other two things I would say, it's free to play, but there's none of that sort of like IAP nonsense really going on. Like, it's ad supported, so there's a lot of ad supported games that I've been playing recently. I think that suits those Twitch games well, the games that kind of need lots and lots of goes.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would say is that the art, which is adorable,
it is cute. It does put me in the mind of your sensible soccers and whatnot from back in the day.
It really is that sort of evocative, very true to your early Amiga sorts of you know, sensey games. And as somebody who grew up in that era, I think that definitely plays to it as well.
Sure.
So it's definitely one to go and have a look at, or at least their range of games with the tiny name at the front are worth kind of having a look at and seeing whether or not it's a thing to like.
Okay, fair enough. And so it's called Tiny Goalie. What's the subtitle?
Tiny Goalie, and then there's Tiny Goalie World Soccer, which I believe is the World Cup version.
Right on, okay.
If you want to get in the mood for the League of the Universe.
Yes, the Coca-Cola ball mug?
World Soccer Cup.
Yeah, football. All right, I've been playing Battleheart Legacy. That's what I've been playing. You've played a bunch of this. Alex has played a bunch of this. I've probably played less than you two, but we did it for about an hour and a half on the stream, and I played a bit more afterwards as well. I did so because it was slightly controversial. Both of our sites, quite independently, AppSpy and Pocket Gamer, gave it pretty much the same score. So Alex gave it 4 out of 5, you gave it an 8 out of 10, which is obviously a very good score. In spite of that, people still complained, I think, on both sides, where they were like, what, this game is 10 out of 12, 15 out of 10.
Change all the scores.
Shut up. And they're like, and we're like, really? Have you played it? And they're like, no, just look at it. Obviously, it is. Oh, brilliant. But no, seriously, it was a follow-up to a game, or rather a spiritual successor to Battleheart, which came out, I think, in 2011. It was a 2D version of it. This has now been brought into glorious 3D. And it had a very, very hardcore following. It was a very beloved game, and people played it for many, many, many hours. So when this one came out, people were very excited. They'd been waiting for it for some time. And when it got like, hey, this game's very good. Not perfect, but very good. I think people were a little bit sort of put out. Having played it for a while, I do think it's very good as well, but I do also believe it's not entirely without its problems. It's a top-down 3D RPG in the casual strain. So you take control of a character whom you can send across a world map. Every location on the map you go into represents a kind of dungeon, whether it be a cave or a wood or whatever. And when you enter the dungeon, you have full health. You have 5 potion flasks, which replenish every time you leave that particular cave. However, if you fail to complete the cave and kill all the enemies therein, then they'll all repopulate and you have to start from the beginning once more. You control your character's class, not by saying, oh, I'm going to be a paladin, or oh, I'm going to be a mage, or I'm going to be a fighter, but by going up to individual members of a guild and being trained in certain areas of combat. So you can buy yourself fireball training or lightning training or whatever, and, you know, level yourself up as a mage. But at any point you can also turn around and go, I'll buy some stuff off the warrior as well. I'll get him to train me up in shield wielding skills. Yeah. However, you have to have the appropriate stats in order to do it. So you need to, for example, if you're going to be mage stuff, you need to have boost your intelligence, boost your what's the other one? Intuition, something like that. Boost all the smart areas, and likewise the smart bits, you know. And likewise, if you want to be a warrior, then you have to put your cash in strength. And if you're a ranger or something, you want to put into dexterity for archery and all that kind of thing. So in order to do that, you have to earn experience, and that experience points boost your levels and gives you points to spend on those individual attributes. It's very smart. The visuals are now reminiscent of a mixture of the Lego games and Final Fantasy VII, I thought.
That is a really good comparison.
The first game was a 2D game, very cartoony in its style. And some people are a little bit like, oh, not so sure about the 3D visuals.
Mate. Come on, 3D.
Yeah, but it's very, very smart. And the backgrounds are lovely. It clearly has been a lot of care and detail and attention paid to it. It's been in development for like 3 years. And it was threatening to come out for the past like year and a half, but was yet to emerge. So clearly there's been a lot of time spent on it. And that shows there's a high degree of polish going on. The combat's handled well in terms of controls, because what you do is you just tap anywhere on the screen to move your character. Tapping on an enemy will lock onto that enemy. You can then move around. And if you're in physical range, you can attack him with your sword or your staff or whatever by pressing one of the power buttons on the bottom of the screen. And if you move a distance, then you'll be able to fire ranged attacks, whether they be spells or bow and arrow stuff or whatever. They then recharge in the same way they do as most RPGs you'll play on a PC. Like if you're launching attacks that are represented by numbers at the top of the screen, you know, you tap it and eventually it recharges and you just attack again. So very, very similar. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more casual than that, as it's something you pointed out, and I think I agree with. And there are places where you can kind of game the game.
Yeah.
So if you, for example, are in the middle of combat and your powers aren't recharging quickly enough, you can run into another screen of that dungeon, because they're all separated by screens. You'll walk through doors and emerge in another place. You can run back through that door, sit on the other side, wait for your powers to recharge, and then run back through the door again and carry on with your attack. Which probably isn't how you're supposed to play, but it's a little way that you can game the system. And it also can become a little bit laborious, I would say, in that way that RPGs do become laborious after a while, because you just sort of, you know, you're backing away from combat and you're pressing the attack button and you're waiting for it to charge, you back away and you attack and you press, you back away and you attack, and you just sort of keep doing that.
You're doing the same thing for 20, 30, 40 hours, you know, like, yeah. That, I guess that's always going to happen. Do you feel, because I'm trying to wrestle with the two words, is it casual or is it accessible? Because I'm...
I don't know.
Like, I'm so almost tempted to say that it is actually casual.
I would say so, because for me, something like Mass Effect is a casual RPG, right? Because it's got all the RPG elements. I mean, this first one's a bit more hardcore, perhaps, but it's nowhere near as intense, and the GUI is nowhere near as complex as something like Fallout or something like that, especially the early Fallouts, which are much more sort of intensive in the backing menus, and it obviously became softer over time. This, I think, is even easier to play than that, and it's got a very shiny, childlike air to it, like making them all cute and fluffy and making them look a bit fancy and a bit Lego. Clearly, it's aimed at an audience that is perhaps not as familiar with RPGs. There's a lot of gameplay here. Like you say, it does go on for hours and hours and hours and hours. You're doing a lot of grinding over the course of that game, but it's very sort of smartly well-executed grinding. This is where I mean. It's very good at what it does. It does have its flaws, and I don't think it's a perfect game, which I think some people are trying to claim that it is. If you're a fan of the first one, certainly you might be all over this. But I recommend it. I think people think we're being down on it, but the problem is, it's as soon as you point out any of the flaws, people start getting quite offended, it seems.
It is perfect!
And I do think it bears worth pointing out the fact that it isn't perfect. However,
no.
Like, presentation-wise, it's fantastic. It's very smooth and slick. It's almost bug-free. I've encountered a couple of glitches, but it is really highly polished stuff. And there's lots and lots of conversation to be had with the guys. Not all of it's as well-written as you might hope for, but there's lots and lots of conversations, and you can engage in different dialogue trees and give good answers or bad answers and, you know, piss people off or whatever. So there's a lot of choice. And I particularly like the way that you build up your character. That's my favourite element of it, I think. The fact that you have that flexibility to not just make a mage, but you can make a warrior mage or a paladin mage or something like that. You can mix your classes and build the character that you want to build. And for that, like, that's good. And that's impressive level of depth. And the controls work well for the device they're created for. It works well on a touchscreen. And, you know, you can't ask for more than that, really. So a pretty strong recommendation for it. Battle Heart Legacy, I think, is £2.99 or $4.99 right now.
Yes.
So go and grab it if you're into that sort of thing. And that's us out. Peter, you're not going to be here next week, are you? Because of
that
E3.
Where am I going to be? Oh, no.
Yeah, I know, right? But we'll try and Skype you in from your roach-infested motel.
What do you want me to bring back from Los Angeles?
Roaches. I don't know. Bring me back an American. I've always wanted to see one in real life. I don't believe they exist, to be honest.
Okay.
My daddy always said they lived at the bottom of the garden, but I never saw one.
Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, and I'm going to make this promise right now.
Okay.
I'm going to take a photo. I'm going to do a selfie with the most American person I can find. I will do a selfie and I will bring this onto the podcast the week after. I promise you that I will find an American and do that.
If you do that, bring him onto the podcast, you get a picture. That's good for the Twitch stream. But do a bit of an audio sound.
Okay, I'll do an audio thing as well. Yeah.
Get him to say howdy y'all or something equally traditional
American.
Excellent. All right, then. Fantastic. You get out there and do the journalism. That important journalism. And we'll keep you informed next week. I'll be here and I'll bring some guests on as well, and we'll have a right old time on next week's podcast. But thanks for listening and watching. Take it easy, boys and girls, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.